Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is one of our News and Cues episode news, because we're going to talk about Star Wars news and cues, because we are too lazy to say the word questions. That's the way I'm taking it. News and cues, Ken. I'm excited for both.
You know, when I moved to Los Angeles 23 years ago now, I thought I had a pretty good vocabulary. I have lost words over the time. A lot of it was the work environment I was in, and then posting, you know, shortening words, being hip, like saying cues. Nah, I just don't know words. It's a problem.
It's fun to say. I joke, but started saying news and cues because it sounds exciting, right? It sounds like a great team up. It's like some Stan Lee superheroes that didn't quite take off. This is the crime-fighting duo News and Cues.
That was, 74, right? They came out in 74.
Yep.
Two issues. Before we get into the news and those questions, we're going to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. As always, a little bit later on, our 4center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Star Wars or Life Adventures. There's always a lot going on in the world, a lot going on in our lives. Sometimes you just want a moment to sit under a tree and cry, or sometimes you just want to pour whiskey and play a video game. Joseph, you've done any of those recently, and how's your life going?
I have done most of those. I'll just let it be a mystery for the listeners, which of those three I've done this week. But no, I had a pretty good week overall. Obviously, the world is extremely challenging. But I've had some good things, some fun things. I'm working on a writing project that I'm really enjoying, and that always really refreshes me and makes me feel like I am holding on to the reins of my life. I am creating a new world. Yay. And still, you know, challenging and weird. But so that's really fun. Is a very positive thing for both Star Wars and life adventure. My wife and I just needed to get out of the house and we were going to go for a drive somewhere. But, you know, you got to be choosy about where you're going, because sometimes you just go there and like, cool, now I'm just at a place in Los Angeles that is far away from any public restroom. Cool. Why did I do this? So anyway, long story short, we wanted to go to a drive somewhere. There's a big side of a building that is the Disney billboard, and it's always whatever the next big Disney thing is. It's, you know, often MCU movies. For a while there, it was that Christopher Robin movie starring Ewan McGregor, which I love so much. The Mando season 2 billboard is up, and it's just beautiful. And normally I would be driving back and forth to pick up my wife at her work, because she works down that way in Beverly Hills. So we just drove past a billboard to drive past a billboard and did a couple loops so I could take a photo, and then one so I could just look at it. And it's great. It's just, is just the Mandalorian. It's, he's walking across, you know, a strange world. There's a little bit of a pond, look, rocks, maybe some snowy rocks. He's got, you know, a blaster in one hand and the child on the other hip and the pulse rifle on his back. He's got everything he needs for adventure, and it's very exciting.
Season 2, The Return of the Pulse Rifle.
Exactly. I'm so curious if it just pops up, or if he's like, got it back from repairs. I sent it away in the space mail.
There it is. It was in the pulse rifle shop. That's good. I love a random just rambling drive through the city, because I do love living in Los Angeles. I really do. So, you know, sometimes it's where you go. But I'm like, yeah, you're right. Sometimes my the border of my drive is time to turn around and head home to safety.
It is. Yeah, because you can get stuck in traffic in Los Angeles. And, you know, back in the olden days, everything was open. So anyway, don't need to belabor that. The point was, it was a really fun trip to just go be a Star Wars fan, you know. And just to have like the nerdy fun of, I'm so looking forward to this show. I so love these characters. Look, they're on a building. Look at how huge they are.
Yeah. Big giant. And yeah. Season 2's kind of big. And we're going to talk about some season 2 news that dropped before we recorded. So we'll get to that in a second there.
Yeah. But how about you? What were your life indoor Star Wars adventures?
You know, after a tough couple weeks, I mean, it just like, I think everyone just, everything just, I was the one crying under a fig tree. It's been, I finally got to go back to the stage again with Mark Reilly for the Reilly's Cantina Live, which your video was a big hit.
Awesome.
New open tweets, Jennifer Landa's contribution with one of her great TikTok videos. Just a lot of fun to put silly Star Wars content out there, or, you know, high concept Star Wars. We did it all. And you guys, you being Jennifer and Joseph, you're Joseph. you really helped make the show just rounded out what we were presenting. But it was a lot of work, as you know, you're a theater company owner.
Yes. Pastor.
You'll appreciate this. We did the walkthrough on Tuesday. By appreciate, I mean, I hate to cause you anxiety. We did the walkthrough on Tuesday. Is everything ready? Oh, great. Yeah, you guys can shoot at the bar, this and that. Great. We got there Saturday. The person who had done the walkthrough, not only not there, hadn't told anyone.
Oh, wow.
It was a full-on brunch. And I am getting more and more comfortable of emerging into the world with some safety precautions. You know, it's just, it is what it is. And we know some people have lost family members to COVID and everything. So I take it very seriously, but I'm also getting in the, all right, I can, my boundaries of that are stretching. But it was, I walked in to go to the manager in the middle of a 1970s themed disco brunch. And I was like, this is not a great start to the day. We got through it. The sound crew, the production crew was great. And then the Wanger boys, Cody, Brian, and Christian really made the show possible. And I'll just say, it's like a Star Wars lesson. There's obstacles in front of you. Things are going to fall apart. It's not going to go as planned, but in the end, you're going to be where you need to be. The Force will guide you. So we had a great show, and it was a lot of fun. And thanks to anyone listening who watched.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure many listeners watched. It sounded like there was like just great reception of watching the show at home. So that's great. I'm glad the show went well. The venue was having brunch inside?
On their patio,
okay.
But it, a tiny spot. So a lot of people, as we were trying to set up very expensive camera equipment with cables to go live, you know, we're shooting from two locations live. A lot of drunk people in 70s disco costumes walking past our lighting gear and cameras.
Yes.
While we're setting up. So it was one of those tents, like, and you're trying to be nice. You don't want to be the jerk. Get out of here. You know, it's one bathroom and spot. So a lot of people passing with no masks, and we're okay.
Yes. I hope so. Yeah. It's such a hard time right now that we do need to find the new normal, but we also need to listen to science.
Yes.
Yes. And I certainly would be concerned that, drunk people dressing up from the 70s might not be listening to science. That would make me nervous. So I'm glad that the show went off. I'm glad that it was all okay.
Yeah. So luckily, to Hanson Dam for testing, I'll go soon. But other than that, it was great. And I took yesterday off, other than preparing some Force Center news for us. Just one of those sitting on a couch days. It was great.
That's awesome. We all need sitting on the couch days.
We do indeed. We do indeed. You know who's not sitting on a couch? Hey, transition into the Star Wars news. The Mandalorian is ready. Season 2 is just a few days away. Really, really. Days away. We're getting there, kids. It's getting inside 2 weeks here now. We got just about, as we're about to record, we got a little collection of Mandalorian bits of information. We got 4 character posters. This is showing what I safe to call kind of the main characters, especially going into season 2. Greef Karga, Cara Dune, the Mandalorian, and the child in one of the more adorable little paintings of the child I've ever seen. Just looking up at the camera, just all like, what do you think about these photos?
Oh, I like them. They're great. I think the thing that is most intriguing to me is the background. I mean, the characters are great. The mood of the characters are great. Great to see the close-up of the Mudhorn insignia. I guess not the close-up, but it's just really prominent. His shoulders kind of turned, and it's catching the light on the Mando there. It looks like Cara Dune is the character of Cara Dune might be under a fig tree having a hard time. There's some emotion there. Greef Karga looks badass. The child looks a little like he is posing for a royal portrait and getting bored. All sorts of great moods and great energy. But that background, this is something that I noticed in the trailer that I really liked. That looks like one of the scenes was in this kind of dark, abandoned urban area that had graffiti. And we've seen graffiti in Star Wars before. Like, we've seen Sabine in particular, right? Tag things on purpose. And that is a real sort of defiant statement of, you know, we are here. We are the rebellion. We are flowing and organic. But we haven't seen, to my recollection, a really like highly tagged area like you would see in an actual, you know, real life urban environment on Earth. And I've spent a bunch of time looking at some of these drawings. It looks like behind Mando, there's maybe like a kind of a spray painted Gamorrean guard, a little bit of a chalk Gamorrean guard in a rebel insignia starboard behind Cara Dune. I'm not even sure there's an interesting face behind Greef Karga, but I honestly can't make out exactly. It looks a little like a Creature from the Black Lagoon, but I don't think it's that. But then the child, it looks like there's these really crude, shaky, sketchy, almost looks like Tusken Raider faces. So I'm just really intrigued by that. If it's nothing more than just a passing environment, it's a really cool addition to Star Wars lore and a great meeting of like a real world Earth thing, but from a Star Wars style. You know, you got the different aliens and you got the Ora Besh, and it looks like maybe some like this one thing behind the child looks a little like a symbol that I've seen associated with Mandalore and Mandalorians before. So all sorts of great juicy stuff in the background. Those are my thoughts.
I love looking at that. Are you looking for clues? Yeah, you can't help, you know, but I just like what you're suggesting, that this could just be part of the landscape and the environment that they're in. And that would be slightly different, not just for background, but just working around the Star Wars galaxy. You know, Tatooine is a little rough spot too, but just, you know, not that it's coarse and a deeper level. I, obviously not saying that, but just like who you will meet. And this would, if there's a secret fighting league, this might be the type of area.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I'm looking for any narrative clues. I think it's just world building clues, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm with you there. I think there would have been a time that we got like these two Tusken Raiders behind the child. We would have assumed that was two new characters that were going to show up in episode 4.
His parents.
His parents are there, confirmed to be Tusken Raiders. And you're so right about that child picture. He definitely looks like a 19th century French aristocrat. I was going to say aristocrat like the movie.
A little bit, yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, that one does need to be framed in on a wall.
Oh yeah.
It's a great, God, this character. We did the main deep dive on the child last week. If you guys listened, if you haven't given a clue, this character just doesn't disappoint.
Never.
Every time I see him.
Every time. It's like, it's another picture of the child. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. You know, the character posters are what they are. They're fun things to get you hyped up, but there's a couple other things. We've got a little, and again, at the time of recording, we always joke, and I'm sure this will be the case, a full-blown trailer could drop 2 minutes after our podcast drops on Tuesday morning. Just stand by. We are the harbingers of promotions to come, I guess. But we got the Mandalorian official Twitter page tweeted out like a 30-second kind of little preview. No new footage except for, from what we saw, Joseph, an extra second or two of the Mando punching a Twi'lek in the face.
Yeah, looked like it was all still kind of pulled from that fighting ring that we saw where the Mando was in trouble and the child hides himself. And a couple maybe little extra shots of that, of the birdies coming for the baddies. And then just a great classic, just punch in the face.
It's a big punch in the face. It's like Bib and Beezer's other cousin is the one getting punched in the face.
Boozer, yeah.
Boozer, that's the one. So that's there to get you hype. And all the stuff, you know, we're not predicting a trailer at all. This isn't that game, but it's just the way it goes for us is the case. But the big thing, I want to talk about this one here, Joseph, is this came from, and I want to shout out to Alex Corey in the Force Center Discord page, who found this one. It's from Star Wars Holocron on Twitter, and they tweeted out a quote from Emily Swallow, and I will say I don't know where that came from, so take that as it as you want there. But Emily Swallow, of course, plays the armor on Mandalorian. She's on the subject of Mandalorian Season 2. Sorry, here I'm scrolling to get it. There it is. The difficulty of a second season is that they, meaning the fans, have more specific expectations because they've already seen something. So I'm really hoping that fans go into it with an open mind like they did for the first season and are ready to go for the ride. So, all right. I think that echoes some stuff we've talked about here, maybe even some of our philosophies on how we work. Force Center here. But Joseph, let's dive into what this means to us as fans.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that it has a certain rhythm with Giancarlo Esposito's recent quote about, you know, hey, some of them, those big answers are going to come in future seasons. It's the same quote where he talked about maybe 5 seasons or whatever. And, you know, who knows? As we talked about then, we never know. You know, actors sometimes don't have all of the information that the actual producers or writers do. So who knows? Take it with a grain of salt. I think, but it creates this picture that there are lots of, at least now, 2 actors within the Mandalorian cast who are saying, hey, remember to just go along for the ride of what this is and don't get too hyped up for answers. And that is interesting to me from the general perspective that I feel like actors are becoming so much more savvy about genre material and the expectations that come with that because of the intensity of fans. The intensity of fans is, you know, a huge positive thing. It's what makes Star Wars and Marvel and DC and Star Trek as special as they are, but it can also come with that, like those expectations, that baggage. So it's interesting to me that actors are becoming really well aware of, like, I know what the fans are like, so I'm, you know, going to say, hey, fans, you know, just be aware that don't come in with too much baggage because we got a surprise for you. And then I think the other part of that that's more specific to The Mandalorian is The Mandalorian, it does such great tip of the iceberg storytelling that we are all, I think, excited for the rest of the iceberg. And I feel like what the actors are telling us is, hey, this isn't going to be everything. This is not going to be the rest of the iceberg. This is going to be two or three other tips. Yeah. And I think that's a really important thing for me to remind myself as a Star Wars fan, because I do get really excited about where could the story go? What could Mando realize about the Mudhorn clan, and you know, what all decisions could he make about who he wants to be, and who what all force things, force people, force temples, force trees could he meet, and you know, when will the big climactic fight with Moff Gideon be, and when will the answers about the child be, and all that. And I think it's really good to step back and look at that first season of Mandalorian. A ton of things happen events wise but a lot of them are just for the sake of character development and for the sake of adventure and for the sake of sort of slowly building bonds between characters. For the big overarching plot of the first season, Mando is hired to get a bounty. It's the child. He gives the child back. He decides he doesn't want to give the child, so he takes it. Then the person who wants the child eventually tracks him down and tries to take the child back and fails. Like, narratively, story-wise, that's what happens. It's a very small amount of story. And everything that we love about The Mandalorian comes not only from that story in the first season, but all of that character building and all of those individual fun adventures that show us a little part of the Star Wars galaxy in this time period and what it means to these specific people. So for me, I take this as a reminder to just to take a big step back and go, the actual big picture story of the truth of who the child is, the truth of what Moff Gideon wants, the truth of who the Mandalorian will eventually become, all of that stuff might only be advanced like a step in terms of the story. But the adventures and the characters is what this is about.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you're speaking everything that's in my heart, and it's always take it as a reminder for myself. I always go back to episode two and watching it and feeling like, whoa, wow, what was that? Did I even like that? I don't know if I like that. Yeah, wait, I really like that. And just feeling a little lost during episode two of season one, going, wait, this isn't what I thought it'd be. And then liking it. But then even then, getting by episode six, slightly upset of like, just what are we doing here? And the video game of the week kind of, you know, big boss of the week kind of fight and all that kind of stuff. Even though I was very, you know, I'm not saying I'm the smartest Star Wars fan, but I got it right. But even by episode six, which might be some of my early problems with quote unquote problems with those episodes of just like, come on. I got to remind myself too, just go on the journey. And I've already got, well, if this character shows up and if this character shows up and that was coming out of season one, I think we even had conversations here, Joseph, of just like, well, now we all have expectations and there you go. It's going to be interesting. And I'm not going to lie and say I'm not bracing for some sort of impact.
Yeah.
Just in the fandom. And it's, you know, that's fine. And I think at this point, we're all aware that this is the cycle. We're all aware, and you talk about the actors. Excellent point, because they're out there on the front lines. They're going to conventions more than any time period as an actor, right? Like,
yeah,
conventions have been around for a long time, but now it's just part of the circuit. It's part of the journey, promoting your stuff. So they know they're going to be, you know, I think of the cast members of Game of Thrones after season eight going to conventions and just not being really happy with the fans. And there was a little bit of a cold war going on, and they know they're out there. And they're the ones having to speak for the series. So I think that's interesting for, you know, Giancarlo Esposito. I think great point for you to bring that into the conversation. And now this, that they're just, and it's not bad, right? They're not like, oh, you're not going to like it. They're just like, hey, we got some cool stuff. Let it happen.
Yeah. Yeah, like think of the Ahsoka rumors, right? Which I tend to believe. And if we went into the second season having no idea that Ahsoka might show up, and let's say that Ahsoka does show up just for total theoretical argument, she shows up in episode 3 for 2 minutes at the end. It's a fun, brief moment. If we had no expectation that Ahsoka was going to be in there, it just would have been, holy bleep, Ahsoka on screen, amazing. But now that we've all been living with this rumor, we have all these expectations. And if Ahsoka is a 2-minute cameo, how upset are people going to be? And that is all about expectations, because we've had time to all individually think what we expect and what we want and what we dream of a live action Ahsoka. And it might be a 2-minute cameo.
Yeah. I mean, I'm almost banking on that. Being good. Yeah, look, I going back to Game of Thrones, sometimes when a casting thing would pop up, I remember going into, what was it, season 6 with... oh my gosh, why am I blanking on the lead guy from Deadwood? Why am I blanking on
Timothy
name?
Oliphant.
No.
Ian McShane.
Ian McShane. Dear God.
Wow. Shutting it out like I'm doing a trivia contest.
Trivia contest. Brad Dourif. when Ian McShane got cast in Game of Thrones, it was like, yes! And he was there for one great episode, one of my favorite episodes, as Brother Ray, a show-only kind of character, kind of an amalgamation of different characters. And that was for me going, oh, yes, Ian McShane's in Game of Thrones, 4-episode arc as this, you know, and that's just the way it is. It's the way it is. And I love that we're there. I love that we have the excitement for this stuff. So, anyways, of all the Mandalorian news, this is the one that was the most interesting to me today, was Emily Swallow saying, yeah, pump the brakes, roll down the windows, turn up the music, and we're going to take you for a ride.
That's right. I agree with the actor who performs the armorer. This is the way.
This is the way. All right, so we're going to move on from Mandalorian news. Yes, I'm sure more will break, and it's the running joke that never ends here at Force Center. But we've, in fact, this was actually last week. After last week's episode on Tuesday, Delray tweeted out 40 tweets. That's a thread, man. 40 tweets of 40 excerpts from their forthcoming book coming out on November 10th, which is a certain point of view, The Empire Strikes Back edition. We all generally enjoyed the New Hope one. We'll talk about that. So they put out a lot of all the stories, the authors, the characters, what they're about. Any one of them grab you, Joseph, that you're curious about, and maybe one or two that you're not quite sure about?
Yeah, as I was scrolling through them all this morning, I found myself really excited by the chapters about kind of known characters that we in the more intense Star Wars fandom are well aware of those characters, and getting to hear their perspective where we maybe haven't as much before. Torn Farr in particular, I was really excited about. Veers, you know, that's a character that I think a lot of people love. You know, obviously I'm aware of the Twitter handle Veers Watch. Great to hear a little bit more Veers' perspective. Piet by Beth Revis. I love Beth Revis' Rebel Rising, so I'm really excited to dive into Piet. That idea of this Wedge chapter where Wedge is like, where the hell are Luke and Han and Leia? All the people who always overshadow me. Like, I've loved that joke of, you know, that joke and that true narrative thing of like, how does Wedge feel about being the and Wedge, you know, of the rebellion leadership? So I'm excited about that. Bossk on his hunt for Han Solo. Kevin Scott's story, which is looks like it's going to feature Jackson and Lobot interacting. I love Jackson, the rabbit, the space rabbit, and I love how much Kevin Scott loves him. And then the other one that really jumped out at me is the L3 jumping off of that quote in Empire Strikes Back that I think partially inspired L3 of 3PO saying, you know, where did your ship learn to communicate? It has a peculiar dialect. So I think kind of grabbing them all together, what is interesting to me about those is really, for me, paying off that certain point of view of characters that I already have a little bit of an investment in and going, I'd really like to know how they feel about their life in this adventure, and ones that are just kind of begging to be told. Like the L3, it feels like that's been teed up by the relationship between Empire Strikes Back and Solo. So it's not like reaching for the most obscure corner, you know, it's like right there. So those are the ones I'm excited about.
Mm. Yeah, I think we're right in the same spot. Veers and Piet, of course. I'm going to insight into the Imperial officers. I'm intrigued by the Dengar and IG-88 buddy comedy that apparently we're going to hear about. Wilro Hood is an expected one. So, I'm keeping an open mind about the Jackson one because I do love Jackson in terms of just a weird. Remember, there was a bunny in Star Wars type of reference, and that's been a case for a long time. And I know Kevin Scott works Jackson into a lot of things, including the Jedi Trials game show and everything that we just were watching. He put some Jackson references in those stories that he was writing. So I like all that stuff. I am intrigued by that. Just I want these. I love when these stories can just give me something that wasn't there. The L3 one as well, but that just I will always think about when I watch the movies. They don't dominate. They don't change the story, but they just, increase my understanding of the characters and enjoyment of what's going on around the corners. So I'll stick. I'm like you. The characters that I know. I'm open to. There's the one here of a socialite talking about Leia on Cloud City. I'm definitely interested in that kind of stuff. But I guess we should. The Obi-Wan one with this quote, I had hoped that dying would be enough to untangle me from the Skywalker's family issues. That I don't know what I feel about that. So I'm going to definitely read to find out. And I wanted to ask you as an Obi-Wan guy, what do you feel about that sentence?
Yeah, I like the concept of it, and I really want to see where it goes. To me, that sentence is a fascinating choose your own adventure of where it's going to go. If you read it to me from the perspective of the Obi-Wan Kenobi, who can be a little grumpy and kind of express it in a sort of grumpy, like if that's the Obi-Wan who says, who's more foolish, the fool or the fool who chooses to follow him, is kind of like, or the Obi-Wan who kind of teases Anakin every time he loses his lightsaber. If it's a sense of humor of like, I can't believe my entire Jedi destiny has just been dealing with this family. If it's having a sense of whimsy about it and a sense of irony to cope with the pain, great. If you turn to page 37 and it's actually really sincere of like, this isn't what I wanted, I don't want to be stuck with this, that might be taking it a little bit too far for me, is my taste as an Obi-Wan fan.
Yeah. Oh, and I have to mention John Jackson Miller getting to write Rae Sloane again. Her appearing in the Empire timeline will be interesting for me. I think a lot of people looking forward to that one.
Big agree with that one, because I think that's another opportunity of this is if a character who in newer canon should have been around then, that's great. Same thing as L3.
Yes, yes. And the L3 one, I'm excited too, because to me it's always kind of, I mean, no surprise. I just have always kind of understood some of the criticisms of the L3 thing, but where it ends up made some sort of sense for me. So I like to see that connected. I just have to discuss, since the first book came out, speaking for myself here, when the first one came out, I really took it all as canon, capital C. This is what it is. And I think it generally is considered that, but it's this kind of, making up the term canon adjacent or canon light, a loose canon. A little bit of legends, the spirit of it is it more in those stories than I took it at the time. Did you have that kind of approach too during the reading of the first book or after, Joseph, or was I alone thinking this was gospel?
Yeah, no, I think I can't remember honestly between the number of interviews and press releases. I think when I was sitting down to read it, I was like, oh, this is canon. And this was one of my first readings when we read that first certain point of view. Where I, took that step back and said, remember, this is a story told a long time ago from lots of different perspectives. And if something doesn't work for me, I just don't need to add it to my personal canon. Yeah. In that first book, there's some stuff about Force spirits that is just powerful to me that I love, that I think about all the time. The part about Yoda having Qui-Gon's cloak and dreaming of training Leia, that makes perfect emotional sense to me, and I love it, and enriches Star Wars to me. And then there's some other stories in that book where just like, I'm not going to imagine that every person around every corner is thinking that, and and some stories that just really, really don't work for me. And there is a freedom in going, I don't need to think about that when I watch the movie. I don't need to have that be true to me.
Yeah, I'm excited for this book, but I will not gonna lie. I'm not as excited as I was going into the New Hope one, just because I don't need everything to be canon with a capital C. This is the fact. I really don't. Inspired by or playing with the edges and giving you something to think about. I'm not overly excited about a Wampa tail, a Tauntaun tail, you know, but I'm going to read them and they might move me. You know, the Dianoga one is both beautiful and one of my least favorite things in Star Wars. And that's the honest truth. You know, like I'm like, I don't need this, but man, this was really sweet and beautiful. Like, and so I'm approaching with that. And it's, and again, I always try to speak to myself. Good reminder of just, you know, you're not always adding to the next line of Wikipedia. You are just getting something that makes a galaxy bigger and at times maybe makes a galaxy more fun. And that's okay too. But there's going to be some in here that I guarantee I like and guarantee that I slip into the Empire Strikes Back timeline and just say, hey, this is my mind is what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. To go, this is the conversation that L3 had with 3PO, or this is where Ray Sloan was during all of these moments. That's great. But like, yeah, there's one that I think is implying, and obviously these are spoilers for the announcement. So if anybody just doesn't want to hear them, you know, again, you know, mute us for a minute. There's one about a stormtrooper who on Bespin who overhears the, I think the description is the most awkward family reunion ever, which to me implies it's a story about a stormtrooper overhearing Vader and Luke. And like, yeah, I don't think the story might be great, but I'm never going to want to watch Empire Strikes Back and imagine like the fun, cheeky stormtrooper who's overhearing this going, whoa, the story might be great. It might be incredibly well written. It's just sometimes yeah. I think just the like, the kind of addition to the narrative in my mind, it doesn't enrich the narrative for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see, but we're going to look into them and we'll read them. Of course we are. We're Star Wars fans. We love them. And I always love new Star Wars, but I agree with you there. That'll be interesting. So look for that November 10th, The Empire Strikes Back, 40 stories, 40 years later. Staying with the books. We're going to the High Republic. We got some news and notes from this forthcoming series in January. And this already, we already would have been enjoying some of these books and comics, right? They moved it back.
Yeah.
I forget that. Yeah. So now we're in January. We've got first things up here. We got a crawl. I'm going to read this crawl. You tell me what you think about this crawl, Joseph. This is, I'd say a crawl to the whole era, not necessarily one story. It's kind of general, and it's some of the stuff we've heard before. But here you go, Star Wars: The High Republic. The galaxy is at peace, ruled by the glorious Republic and protected by the noble and wise Jedi Knights. As a symbol of all that is good, the Republic is about to launch Starlight Beacon into the far reaches of the Outer Rim. This new space station will serve as a ray of hope for all to see. But just as a magnificent renaissance spreads throughout the galaxy, so does a frightening new adversary. Now the guardians of peace and justice must face a threat to themselves, the galaxy, and the Force itself. Fade into the stars, and our story begins. What do you think about that crawl? We love our crawls in Star Wars. What does it mean to see the High Republic have a classic crawl?
Oh, yeah, it's great. I think it is one of the things that is most exciting about Star Wars movies. We have all those debates about whether the non-Skywalker saga movies should ever have crawls. Solo has its non-crawling crawl. So it's like it's aesthetic power. It welcomes you into Star Wars, but it is one of, I think, the powerful things in Star Wars that that makes it feel like a story. Like, obviously, all narrative movies are a story, but this is like that. This is what makes it space fantasy. This is what makes it feel like you are opening a storybook and you are hearing about this adventure that happened a long time ago, and you are wondering, as we were just discussing, about how reliable the narrator is, you know, and all of that mood comes with the opening crawl. So I think it's really great to have that with the High Republic. And then I think for the actual content of this crawl, the crawls have always done a great, great job of balancing, catching you up on the actual plot, and setting the thematic stakes of, you know, if it's hope or rebellion or whatever the stake is in that particular story. I really like how kind of fresh the thematic stakes are. You know, phrases like ray of hope and renaissance, and that you're really saying you're starting at a point where not only is the galaxy at peace, everything is so great that they're expanding, and it suggests a galaxy where everyone is aware of and discussing, hey, this is one of the greatest, most noble, prosperous times that we've ever had as a galaxy. So let's go out there and bring that beauty that we're all experiencing to even more of the galaxy. And then contrasted with, whoops, no, tragedy, threats, horrible reality. It really is different in that it starts with the galaxy really aware of how great things are. Like, I think some of us went into the prequels with the baggage that this is what the story we were going to see. But, you know, as we all know, the Republic was already crumbling a little bit in the Phantom Menace. The trade dispute was already one of the things that was eating at the edges of this. This to me is, in some ways, it's really fulfilling the hope of what some people thought the prequels were going to be of. It's a great time. Everybody's aware it's a great time. Now there's a horrible reality that the Jedi have to deal with.
Yeah. I'm almost like, is this the Star Wars version of the Roaring Twenties? We're just going to have a lot of fun. I like what you said. I like this idea that, you know, because it's very rare that you're looking around going, folks, we are in the best times we'll ever have. But I like that you're aware, you said that they're aware and they're trying to grow and expand. And then that this could be for this generation of Jedi, the first real outside challenge to what they do. Outside challenge to what they know, and that goes beyond just something that happens, but them as a collective organization, if you will, having to deal with that. Again, there's been big battles. I get that. I know the history, but for this generation, be like the Sith wars are behind us. The Mandalorian wars are behind us. This is great. We got these good jobs. Let's go out and share the love. Hey, problems arise. I just something I like that. As each Jedi figures out how to deal with that. And this crawl kind of sets it up for me in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. In terms of kind of like real world, how we talk about our own history, like I wasn't alive then, but the way we talk about the early Kennedy administration, the way it was called, it was literally called Camelot, right? And you had this young, handsome president and, you know, the whole world was fascinated with the first lady with his, you know, interesting and elegant and beautiful wife. And it felt like this new dawn for America. And then, bam, the assassination and the sort of the reality of, you know, a lot of things going on in America bubbled to the surface, you know. And that mood is really interesting to me that they think they're in Camelot and then something horrible happens and it makes them have to go, yeah, things are great. We're doing well, but the dark side is always there and these bad things in the galaxy are always there. And now we have to deal with them because this kind of beautiful hope was shattered.
That's a great, great picture of the era that you've just kind of composed there and put together. That really makes some sense for me. Not to connect it directly to, you know, New Hope's, you know, original trilogy, but New Hope is, you know, Nixon era coming out of that. And a lot of the prequels are leading to that. We know George was playing around with that stuff, but if you want to kind of lay that down on the timeline, this is 200 years earlier. I get it. But what you said of just like, it's great. Everything's great. And inside and out, there's problems, not so much like the Phantom Menace type of problems, but just things that will have to be dealt with, learned, those kind of obstacles. That's really interesting to make it to the early Kennedy days.
Yeah. I mean, it's Camelot in lots of different ways. Yeah. I think they're referring to King Arthur Camelot, but it's that same idea of like, everything's great.
A lot of this came out of the New York Comic Con virtual panels and stuff that's been going on. So I'm going to read a couple of news and notes here. We can dive on in. Phase 2 books will include Kevin Scott writing a novel, mostly known for his work on the comic side. Justina Ireland back at it with a YA novel. Daniel Jose Older writing a middle grade novel. There's going to be a lot of content in this High Republic era. We'll see if we can keep up. And, you know, if you kind of do the hunt and peck on the salad bar of Star Wars, but we'll try to take it all in. There's a lot of stuff about connections to the Force, Joseph. I want to get your thoughts here. Avar Crisp perceives the Force as music. The Wookiee Jedi perceives the Force as a large forest, and they're kind of a tree or a leaf in that forest. Claudia Gray has said she's written two kind of characters, one a Matthew McConaughey with a spaceship type character. We don't know if the Force is connected to that character, but Claudia Gray has written a Jedi that is less in tune with the Force and has to work hard to connect. So I love that we're going to be getting a lot more of what it actually means to these individual Jedis, and they can still bring their perspective to the organization.
Yeah, yeah, I absolutely love hearing this. One of the things I've said all along about High Republic that I'm most excited about is really taking time to dive into the individual characters and perspective of the Jedi. I do think we get a little bit of that in the Clone Wars animated series, but there are parts of it where, like, well, they're all pretty stand up and noble, and we mostly spend time with the, you know, the Jedi who are a little bit more reckless, and sometimes it can just feel like the Jedi are in lockstep. But I really like the Jedi being very different characters with very different perspectives, and this is already paying that off. The Claudia Gray thing is literally a thing that we have talked about on Force Center going back a while, of like, you know, when we get great listener questions about, like, what kind of Jedi do you want to see? I said, I want to see a Jedi who are like, yeah, I'm not, I can feel the Force. I can manipulate the Force. I'm not that powerful. Yeah. We stay with the powerful characters so much that it's great to have it be like, I can do it. It does not come easy for me. And I, yeah, poor, I, that thing that Anakin Skywalker just did, nope. I could never do that. You know, that's a fascinating character to me.
Look, it's fascinating to me. This is not necessarily what you meant by that back then or what Claudia Gray has written. But the idea of, you got the Jedi, you got this big Jedi temple, and you got, you know, Jocasta Nu. Everyone always makes fun of when they first learn. And some people still learn. And I'm talking about people in our generation of fans who are like, wait a minute, there was a librarian? And there's that kind of joke. But it's like, that makes sense. Yeah, the Jedi Temple guard makes sense, of just an in-house kind of guard of what's going on there. To me, I'm always, there's got to be a Jedi head chef.
Oh,
there's,
yeah,
got to be a Jedi maintenance team, you know? And so if there's a Jedi who's like, man, I just cannot do the flippity flips, but I can really, really spit shine this kitchen. Let me do it. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't want to just be like a joke, but just different kinds of Jedi, especially during this era. I think you can explore it more than the, you know, when you got to move and whiz bang through a movie, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And in this more peaceful era, if there's a Jedi who's like, in terms of like your just power in the Force, you know, you're, how quickly and easily you can throw things around, and you can block blasters while also throwing things, like, yeah, you're not that connected with the Force to manipulate it, but you're a great diplomat. We don't encounter that much violence. Go out there and you'll be fine.
Yeah. That's intriguing to me.
Yeah.
Good stuff. This final couple. Many references to the High Republic have already been placed in other Star Wars stories and have yet to be discovered. There's some that are, we all have just read, whether it's comics or, you know, some of the books already, just there. It's very clear. Like, characters are going, remember the High Republic? But I'm excited to know that there are many that I've missed. I want there to be just a ton that I've missed. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. I'll probably have to wait till Alex puts out a Star Wars Explained video of all the connections. Get on it, Alex. But you know what I mean? Like, I think that's fun that the answers, some answers are clues, more than answers, clues are out there. And then I don't even know. That excites me as a Star Wars fan. I don't know about you.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I always thought that maybe the monolith thing in the second Alphabet Squadron book might tie in, but I kind of feel like, yeah, I don't think people would miss that. It's a pretty big thing. It occurred to me that maybe some of the, I wonder if any of the accident in that happens at the beginning of High Republic is going to add to the chaos of the unknown regions. That would be interesting to me. But, you know, beyond that, like, I have no idea what little planet or little character or little moment was referenced. And I'm with you. I look forward to Alex's video.
Yeah, that's the one I have to get ready for. So there's some look at the High Republic material coming in January. I'm getting excited. Like, I'm just excited because we're starting to get ideas and characters and lightsabers. Well, I still really don't have an idea of what this is going to be, and that excites me as a Star Wars fan. So I think you're probably in the same spot, Joseph, learning about cool Jedi robes and what they're going to do with them.
Yeah, in that last part of the crawl, the threat to the Force itself, I love that that is going to force the Jedi to look philosophically at their own view of the Force, and I like that I'm not exactly sure what that means, you know, narratively. How is this going to be a threat to the Force itself? I'm really excited for that too.
There you go. Star Wars The High Republic, Camelot. That's what we've just now renamed. Final tidbit of information. Not a lot, but I had to include it because, you know, we're doing a Star Wars podcast with Joseph Scrimshaw. You got to talk about Kenobi. Kenobi. A tidbit of Obi-Wan news came from Ewan McGregor appearing on the Graham Norton show. He got asked about Kenobi by both Graham Norton and another guest on the panel. Confirmed, I'll say again, I think this is relatively, you know, old news, but confirmed the start of production is March 2021. We know they're going to be shooting on The Volume or something like The Volume. He did talk about studying and preparing for playing a younger Kenobi and what he's trying to do now. You know, talking about watching older Alec Guinness movies and prepping for prequel era stuff. But this is different now. And I got to ask you, we've talked a lot about whether it was the movie or the series idea and just talking about Kenobi in the desert. I know you have a lot of thoughts on that there. Expecting of this version of Kenobi in terms of performance, speed of the character? Is he breaking down? Is he slow? Is he closer to the, oh, let me sit down on this rock or log? What do you want Ewan to bring to this kind of actual performance of Kenobi?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I did want to just shout out, every time that Ewan McGregor has been on Graham Norton, it's fun. So just go back. He's done some lightsaber fighting, and he's talked about how much he's like, yeah, no, I did this a long time. I don't forget. There's a great one after Force Awakens where he can't remember the line that he said as Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
So if you're bored, just go check out Ewan McGregor on all Graham Norton appearances. But for your great question, Ken, of what we're expecting for this version of Kenobi, I'm really expecting two things. The weight of everything that he's lost, even though it has been years, right? I am expecting, mm-hmm. honestly, just PTSD. We talked mm-hmm. about that a little bit when we did our deep dive into Obi-Wan's Hut of Exposition, that he still feels the pain of, you know, before the dark times, before the Empire. And this is mm-hmm. still fresh for him. And we concentrate on the personal for Kenobi and the relationships that we really know of. Oh, he lost Anakin, right? But he lost everything. That temple was his home. You know, he grew up around all of those Jedi who were slaughtered. They're gone. The Force probably feels different to him in his bones. So I think that there's going to be a little bit of, we've always talked about the Kenobi movie might feel a little bit more like an indie movie in a, like, I expect some beautiful shots of him trying to keep going forward while staring at those twin sons and just feeling it. So there's that side of it, the PTSD. And then I think there is the other side of it of, but I do have a mission now. It is to watch over the next generation. So trying to find purpose and joy and hope in his current assignment as a Jedi. I think those are kind of the balance, that a little bit of that, like, I still want to be out there doing things, but I know this is what I need to be doing right now and fighting off the weight of the horror.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of stoic staring into the twin sons. It's more just, tapping into, you know, and Ewan's talking about, you know, joking even about being a little bit older and closer to Alec Guinness in age now from A New Hope. But like, you and I have always talked about the turning of the page of Kenobi as a character, looking back on his failures, maybe trying to correct those, but then looking ahead. And that's just, you know, speaking very general about what we think this might be. So if that can be just even down to the physical side of it, you know, not that I want this to be him just fighting space pirates or water thieves or evaporator thieves, but just like things that he, oh man, this truly, it's starting to hit me that this isn't my fight anymore, even though I want it. And they obviously going to be something big, and I hope there's a confrontation, you know, with Vader or anything like that. Any in the rumors we've heard before, years, we're talking rumors from years ago or whatever the big thing is. I'd love to see him play those little things of just that Kenobi. When you and I broke down that hut scene recently in Force Center, scene, just looking in the background of what's hanging in Kenobi's hut, just a memory of things, and that he can now fondly look back and look forward, get a little momentum for his new mission. And you know, I can't play baseball anymore, but I can coach it. That's a transition I want to see physically. You know, playing around with the twin sons, you know, just wrecking his skin, you know, turning him a little older, faster. I want all that. And I think you and studying Alec Guinness, older Alec Guinness versus younger, I think that's going to kind of appear there.
Yeah. I think it's in the Ahsoka novel, that passage about the twin sons, you know, being really hard on you and the knees cracking.
Yeah.
And I do. That's one of those things that could be a joke of like, how did he age so fast? But I like it. It feels right for what he's going through in life and for the reality of it. It's a desert world with the two sons that I really would like a little bit without being too jokey about it. Of I'm getting too old for this bleep of like, he isn't moving. He's communing with the force, with the cosmic force. He is not using the living force a ton, and it's wearing on his body and it's wearing on his connection with the living force. Is all really interesting thematic stuff. And, you know, Ewan McGregor's got that classic Harrison Ford charm. Like, Harrison Ford changed the action movie world forever when he played the pain of being an action star. And I know Ewan McGregor can play the hell out of that, of absolutely cool Obi-Wan move when he needs to do it. And then the, damn it. You know, I beat them all, but one of them got a shot off of my shoulder because I'm too slow now and it hurts.
Yeah, look, you and I are still very young, right? We're still very young, gray in our beards. Like, I have older friends who are like, you ain't know nothing yet, kid, because they're in their 60s. But it does something to you. And if you're younger and you're listening, this isn't just, gather around, let me tell you a story. You look in the mirror and you're fine. You're like, I like this gray beard. I like this. But you're like, man, did I waste my 20s? Did I do that right? Man, it was there and gone. Like, all those kind of things. Time flies. It blows your mind. And for to have Kenobi to deal with that in a real world way as well, but going, man, you know, that in that time period before, you know, when I met Anakin and 10 years before the Clone Wars, like what could I have done better? And looking back, I want some of that. Again, like you said, not in a jokey way of like, look at my face, man, this is bad. But just it sends you down an emotional journey sometimes. Down an emotional path when you see a picture of yourself on Facebook just 4 years ago and you're like, I don't even know who that person is. not to go down too far. I don't need this to be Star Wars, the middle-aged person story, but it is Kenobi. That's where he is. And I do want some of that there.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's just an honest real life thing that can be translated to the Force in a very interesting way too, which is use it or lose it, right? If you keep active, you know, you still age, your knees still hurt, your back still hurt, but if you keep active, you feel you have more energy and you can keep doing some of the things you did when you were younger longer. And if you just sit in a hut, not so much. And that's really interesting on a philosophical level as well, of use it or lose it.
I love that. I love that. McGregor joked about, hey, it's not just me in it. There's going to be other characters. So outside of you and I have talked a lot about Owen and Beru and Joel Edgerton. We would just love that dinner table scene or running into Owen and Beru at a shopping mart and them getting mad at him, or Owen getting mad at him. And other characters, you know, we could maybe guess about some other bigger characters, whatever. But I want to know, too, for you, especially a Kenobi fan, to the level you are, Joseph, what type of characters do you hope interact with Kenobi? So is it going to be, do you want a new sassy droid? Every Star Wars story got a new sassy droid. Bounty hunter showing up makes some kind of sense at a bar, a gangster. That obviously makes some sense. We definitely want another bartender, or maybe Wu-Hair himself. Have you thought about the type of characters you want to see?
Yeah, your list is great, Ken. A young Wu-Hair for sure. A slightly younger Wu-Hair would be great. Or any bartender, because Kenobi in a bar is a tradition. I love that. Sassy droid might be interesting, since Kenobi doesn't seem to have a ton of respect for droid. So bartender's high on my list. Another kind of character I'd like to see is some sort of trader or townsperson that Obi-Wan likes. Like, actually enjoys chatting with, in the same way he enjoys chatting with Dexter Jetster, but also feeling that sad push and pull of like, I really like talking to this person. I can't hang around with him too much or let him know too much about me, you know, because that's dangerous. So I'd like that. I definitely, for big, like, oh wow moments, I would love to actually see or hear Obi-Wan commune with Qui-Gon just directly. Would be great for big moments. And then my last one here, jumping off your bounty hunter thing, I started to kind of spin down, like, what would be really interesting about that? Like, hey, random bounty hunter that he has to fight off to protect Luke. We've seen things like that in comic books. Great. I'd love that. Mm-hmm. But there'd be some real weight if it's a bounty hunter who just was like, maybe it's not even a conflict. Maybe it's just Obi-Wan needs to go into town and a bounty hunter looks over and like, wait, I know that guy. That guy kicked my ass during the Clone Wars. And if like a bounty hunter who knows Obi-Wan, who has a grudge against Obi-Wan, is not like actively like hunting Jedi, but just like, damn, is that him? I think there's something about Obi-Wan not, you know, kind of having to outrun his past and not really being able to, that I think is going to be at the center of this story. So, you know, it could be Embo. I love Embo. I'd love to see a live action Embo. It could be a bounty hunter we've never met or heard of before. But I love that idea of like, hey, wait, didn't you kick my ass during the Clone Wars? And that being like a problem for Obi-Wan, because then this bounty hunter is coming for him and he's got to deal with it. But, you know, can't reveal himself too much. I'd love that.
That makes a lot of sense. You're on Tatooine. You're on Mos Eisley. You're in Mos Eisley if you do go into town and, you know, a scum and villainy hangout. And it's not too long ago that you were punching scum and villainy in the face. No, my name's Ben. No, it's not.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. It could be fun and good.
Force pushed me off a ledge. My knee still hurts, you ale.
Have a drink. So there you go. Our look at Obi-Wan Kenobi. I'm super excited for this series. Just can't wait. But I also want to stay in the present and not slip too far ahead in my mind with time. Kids, it goes fast. We got some Mandalorian news, High Republic news, the Empire Strikes Back book, a lot out there. But that concludes our look at news today. Before we take a quick break to reset, we're going to do a Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, what do we have?
Yeah, since it's October, it's spooky season, and I like spooky season. I wanted to recommend a spooky book, and that is Lords of the Sith by Paul S. Kemp.
Do it. Oh, it's still one of my favorites. Download your free audiobook today. Go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audio book. All right, we're going to take a quick break. On the other side of this, your cues. That's questions. That's what we learned in today's episode. Stick around. This is ForceCenter.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, Four Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Four Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138. Hey, Force Center fans, don't forget Force Center is on YouTube. Head over there to catch up with our new show, Star Wars Show and Tell. Joseph, Jennifer, Ken, and special guests sit down and share favorite items from their own Star Wars memorabilia collections. Plus, there's the In Memoriam video series, encore presentations of Databank Brawl, and special programming all there for you, and more shows on the way. It's Force Center on YouTube. Check it out. And we are back here on Force Center. It's time to look at our audience questions. Our listeners always come up with some great ones. Joseph, what do we have this week?
Yeah, we got two great questions from Twitter and two great questions from our patrons on Patreon. So let's dive into Twitter. First from Vanessa Fontaine, which, by the way, awesome name. Vanessa Fontaine says... Go ahead.
Yeah. We didn't plan that. I was like, Fontaine. Look at that. Good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Vanessa Fontaine has definitely appeared in a Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall film, I think, just by name. Anyway, Vanessa says, I consider you guys professors of Star Wars. Thank you. That's very, very nice. And Vanessa says, I learned so much. If you could either teach or attend a class at the Jedi Academy, what class would you like to participate in? So, Ken, do you want to teach? Do you want to listen? What do you want to do at the Jedi Academy?
Well, first of all, if I'm a professor of Star Wars, I'm like the Rodney Dangerfield in a bad 80s comedy version. Like, hey, I don't know how I got this job. It's all party. Yes. If I was to attend a Jedi Academy class, I would want it to be about focus. Like, I'm not a meditator. I understand the practice and enjoy those. I love him. My girlfriend's really big on that kind of stuff. I'll start listening to those calm. We play those calm things, mm-hmm. You know, the stories and everything. And let's do a daily daily meditation. 2 minutes in, I'm like, man, I got to trade that player and MLB the Show. tomorrow I got to go to order contacts. I just can't. So I'd love to learn. And maybe Qui-Gon could teach me. This is before he got sent into action there on Naboo. Like how to focus when he drops to his knees in the middle of that Maul fight. Yeah. It's one of my favorite Qui-Gon moments of just because I have a nickname of Kenny No Bothers and things can roll off my back pretty easily. I also have more of Obi-Wan in that mall fight of let's go get him. And so I'd love to learn that. The focus, a little force meditation.
Yeah, no, control. You must learn control. That's just what the syllabus says about the class.
Yes.
Yeah, focus is great. Yeah, I have to, very kind of Vanessa to say, Professor, it's really fun to get to think so much about Star Wars and share our thoughts on Star Wars. And I admit my first reaction was not super deep and philosophical. It was lightsaber training. I would like to attend lightsaber training. I think lightsaber training is philosophical. They're a great bit in Master and Apprentice, a great running bit where Obi-Wan is frustrated and doesn't understand why Qui-Gon won't let him advance. And it's because Qui-Gon has a philosophical belief that Jedi rush past the basics. And in order to stay alive, the basics. So lightsaber training would be great to see how much philosophy it is, the fantasy of holding that lightsaber and actually being taught how to use it instead of just waving it around in a way that will immediately cut my own hand off. That would be great. I'm a big fan of a lot of the philosophy that is presented in Star Wars through the Jedi. Some of it is really explicit. Some of it is subtle, and you just kind of find it in bits and pieces in the Clone Wars animated series or Rebels or different books really digging into what Lucas said or interviews with Lucas. But one of the ideas that I really, really like is this idea that the Jedi are seeking balance in many ways, but in particular, this balance of knowing what you know, but also questioning what you know. And it's a philosophy that, you know, like so many things in Star Wars, it is pulled from many real world philosophies. Right. But I really like that idea that you go through life and you learn things and you must have the wisdom and the strength to go, I learned that lesson. I think it is a lesson that is sort of onward from time. It is true to humans. It is true to myself. And so here it is in my collection of things that I have learned and I should remember. But I must also question things. So always being willing to pull out this collection of here are the seven wisdoms that I feel are true, fundamentally true. But in order for them to still have value, I must always question them and always be open to the new and still trying to decide, you know, just because you question an old fundamental truth doesn't mean that you're going to always decide, yeah, throw that one out. But you got to be opening to questioning it. And how the Jedi teach that, because it also just goes to Yoda's, you know, 900 years old by the prequels, and he has, a bunch of fundamental truths, but he's still always saying, but look at how beautiful the mind of a child is, because they look at things in a different way, and they look at things in ways that we don't when we get too rigid, and it goes to the story of the Jedi's rigidity. So I would love that if they just have a sort of, how to cling to knowledge while also being open to throwing it out 101.
That's great. No, that's great. And then the class ends and you walk out and I'm like, hey, let's go get a beer down at the Dexter's. No, it'd be great. No, that's great stuff. There's so much. We always joke about the Harry Potter in Star Wars type of Jedi story. You know, a lot of people ask that and everything. There's something to that if you could really spend some time learning this stuff. I don't necessarily think I go around wanting and needing all those answers, but I think there's some storytelling there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's all just a great fun stuff that can let you into the Star Wars story in a different way. So I would love to take a class in the Jedi Temple.
Love it.
Yeah.
Right.
And I would absolutely go to Dexter Jetster's for a beer, because that's one of my fundamental truths, that it is fun to get beers after class with friends. We're going to move on to our next question from Sith Fisto, another great name. Sith Fisto says, channeling your best Chaz Nachatic, what music in-universe or the real world would you listen to flying in a dogfight? I think the easy answer for the in-universe music would be a playlist of just Jedi rocks. Wow, powerful. It is hard to know if Sith Fisto is one of the, I think, relatively small number of Star Wars fans who legitimately loves Jedi rocks, or if he's having some fun. He or she is having some fun. I don't know Sith Fisto's gender. So, Ken, how do you feel about this? It's great in Alphabet Squadron, Chasna Chattuck in her B-Wing, listening to music as she flies around. What would you listen to?
See, in universe music is a little... Not that there's not a lot of choices. There's definitely been some choices presented to us, but it'd be, Lulu Primock and Figuring Dan and all that kind of stuff. Some side snoodles would be great. I'd want some Lapty Neck playing. But I just feel like I don't have the right answer because I don't know the galaxy's full playlist yet. I would love a Star Wars Universe Spotify playlist. But I'm a big music fan. You are too, Joseph. And you and I have a lot of different tastes all over the music, rock world, classical world, whatever it may be. So for me, if I'm in a Y-wing, and you know, and I was thinking, you could literally test this out with Squadrons, right? You could just make a playlist and put it in your headphones. I might do this. I like a lot. I'm a British rock fan from a lot of different eras. So, you know, a big Oasis fan. Their music for Saturday Night and Fighting. So that might work. The Jam back in the day. But then going to Minnesota, your neck of the woods. There, Joseph, the Replacements, the Mats. Such a huge fan of some of. Give me some of Westerberg's attitude. Then maybe down to Detroit with Mooney Suzuki in the early 2000s garage band revival. Some kind of. I like my jingly jangly guitars, but I don't like them too heavy. I like some rhythm. I like some melody, but I like some attitude. So I'm gonna form this playlist and I'm gonna try this on Star Wars Squadron.
And see what works best.
Yeah, sing along to 99% by Mooney Suzuki as I blow TIE fighters out of the space skies there. That'd be good.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great list. Yeah, I think for me in universe, I think the song that would have like the best mood for flying is probably the Cantina song, I'm Mad About Me, right? I think that's the one that I would feel like that's the right mix of like rhythm and melody and forward movement of all the songs. For real world songs, I'm a big Guns N' Roses fan. That is particularly if you've got a long drive at night. Guns N' Roses is great for that. I would happily listen to Welcome to the Jungle or Chinese Democracy. Yes, I am one of those fans who does enjoy that later Guns N' Roses album. Shocking, I know. It's not enough to have shocking Star Wars opinions. I have to have shocking Guns N' Roses opinions, too. Also a big fan of, Tin Pan Alley, jazz. It gets called easy listening sometimes, which does not work for me that it's called easy listening, but it does. But in particular, a big fan of Frank Sinatra, but I also really enjoy Ella Fitzgerald. And I was listening to one of her albums the other day that I haven't listened to in a long time. And I think Ella Fitzgerald would be really great for the way Chaz Nachatic describes trying to kind of get her flying in sync with the music, because a ton of Ella Fitzgerald's stuff is extremely upbeat jazz, and she really plays with the melody and a lot of scatting. And it's exactly that kind of like, I need to be, you know, flying forward fast with energy, but also like really adaptable and fast. And I think the right Ella Fitzgerald album would be great for that. And then the final one, I was with a storytelling group for a long time where we would put on about an hour long storytelling show and we'd tell 10 minute stories and we would each have intro music that we played every time. And the song that I picked is the song Comfort Eagle by Cake, because it's the art of picking music for walkout music, as you know really well from Schmodown and Wrestling, Ken, is always you got to, if you're just giving somebody a track and it starts right away, you can't have a 30 second slow buildup. It's got to be a jam right away when you hit play, and Comfort Eagle is a jam right away, and it's got this like forward energy, like we're coming and we're gonna have fun, damn it.
This is great, by the way. Sith Vista, this is great, because you put some great choices, like having Ella Fitzgerald and just have that like fighting, you're flying, it's violent, and you have kind of a different vibe, you know, and the two vibes kind of come together. Maybe it calms you, maybe it centers you, like I like that you talked about the momentum. Or you could just go straight to November Rain would take you on a long journey.
Real long journey. I'm thinking,
yeah, I want Supernova by Liz Phair. I want the Donnas, maybe Black Bells. I might even, you know, we'll talk about this off air, Joseph. I'm suggesting that we could put together Spotify playlists and make them private and then put them in our Four Center Patreon page. And you all get to hear what we'd fly around fighting in. We might do that as an exclusive, because that I do that on my Knapsack Files when I do have a monthly playlist that I do a little radio show for my Patreon supporters. But this is a great question. I wrote some answers and more pouring into my mind. So
well, you are a natural born DJ, right? I mean, that's a part of your life history.
Yes. Natural born DJ, not too far from natural born killers. Yes. in that era. Great stuff. All right. Love it.
Great. questions, Sith Fisto. Thank you. We're going to move on to questions from our patrons on Patreon. First one comes from Andrew McNabb. Andrew McNabb greets us by saying, "Bright suns." A question for the news and cues. Here's the scenario. It's over, Anakin. I have the high ground. Anakin decides, by golly, I do believe he is right, and decides to float away down the lava river broodingly, staring back at his master. Does Obi-Wan chase after his brother to continue the battle, or does the love he have for him prevent Obi-Wan from doing that? After all, he tells Anakin not to try it. Thank you for becoming, for me, as enjoyable a part of being a Star Wars fan as anything else, except perhaps my Max Rebo musical plush. Nothing touches that. Be safe. Thank you very much, Andrew, for the kind words, the great question, and for letting me know you have a Max Rebo musical plush. That's amazing. Ken, what are your thoughts on this? Do you think that if Anakin had not tried it, Obi-Wan would have pursued?
First of all, this has just become now one of my favorite Star Wars comedy scenes. It's almost like a Christopher Guest movie or a British Office. It's like, don't try it, Anakin. Okay. And he just floats away. And Obi-Wan, like, oh, no, wait, I have a job to do. And so that gets me to maybe my more serious answer. Is he has a job to do, right? I mean, he wasn't sent there to lightly convince Anakin to consider not doing what he's doing. He's there to destroy him or kill him or stop him or something. So I think Obi-Wan would have to be like, oh, Cara Bast, I got to go get him. And the great emotional scene, and Andrew's mentioning there, of just like, I don't want to do it. This is really tough, but he's going to do it. Him walking away and leaving him burning is also a fun conversation to have about what maybe Obi-Wan should have done or what mercy was there, but which is what will be in the Kenobi series. We assume an entire episode of episode 3, I should have stabbed him in the head.
I think that's episode 1 myself, but yeah.
So other than this being really funny, Andrew, I think you'd have to, right? Joseph, he has to, you know, Kenobi, he's your buddy. He's got to go do his job.
I don't think he does it. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that, you know, he does say, I will do what I must. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, underlining on must, leading to that great Anakin line of you will try. Mm-hmm. But that is only really after seeing for himself. He saw those holo vids. And even after that, he's telling Obi-Wan, or he's telling Yoda, Obi-Wan is telling Yoda, I can't do it. And then he follows Padme. He sees the horror of Anakin choking her. He gets that confirmation that that Anakin is not open to new ideas, not open to any other perspective. You're with me or you're my enemy. And that's like, all right, well, I'll do what I must. But I don't think Obi-Wan's heart has ever been in this. I think for me, my Obi-Wan headcanon is Obi-Wan is looking for any excuse to walk away. That he is a person of duty and he knows Anakin must be stopped, but he's looking for any reason to not personally just brutally kill him. And I think he cuts the limbs off to stop the fight because he's given his Jedi warning of don't try it. Anakin's not going to stop. He's consumed. He's limbless and burning up. And I think there's a part of Obi-Wan that knows he should make that mercy strike and end it all the way. And it's just close enough to assume the job is done and I'm going to go. I feel like if Anakin stopped fighting, I think that Obi-Wan would be able to give himself the out of, well, he stopped himself now. And once a Sith gets going, they normally never stop. They'll run away, to survive another day. But if Anakin stops fighting and just floats away, I think that would trigger in Obi-Wan a little bit of hope. And I think another part of this that I think about in Obi-Wan's mind is I think Obi-Wan does put defense first. And I think he's looking for any way to not have to, you know, make that killing stroke. And I think that Obi-Wan saying, I got to go get to Padme and make sure she's safe and get her out of here. And I think that could, on one hand, be a valid choice for Obi-Wan and at the same time be a way out. It's like he stopped fighting. He'll need to be dealt with eventually, but right now I need to put defense first. I don't know if he's heading back to Padme. She needs to be out of danger. It's more, he could tell himself, he could go and tell Yoda, like, I had to get Padme out of there, so I had to let him go.
This is great. This is what you know Kenobi so well. I could see all this. And then to have a cutting back forth running to Padme race between the two of them. And, you know, with 3PO and RT over there to help. So, yeah, no, that does, that makes sense. I mean, this is tough. Kenobi's in a tough spot here. They've put him in a very tough spot. So, taking the out, I know you don't mean that in a bad way either, but just like, not like a, well, there you go. But just like, okay, he's not fighting me. I like that. Okay. You may have convinced me.
Yeah. Yeah. And who knows? I got my headcanon about Obi-Wan from the all of the evidence out there of who he is. But who knows? I got to be open to being wrong about Obi-Wan, too. So who knows? Maybe you're right. Maybe he would have been committed to that point of like, it's sad, but he's got to go.
Got to go.
And that's the best way to protect Padme. So I got to go jump on that little floating lava thing and keep fighting.
The chase continues.
We are on to our last question. In the grand tradition of questions from our Patreon listeners, this is sharing the patrons' perspective as well. Lovely question in fun essay form. So here we go. Mm-hmm. It is from Andrew Casasa. Hello there, Force Center crew. As someone who is a prequel baby but was drawn in by the creature design in Bounty Hunters, I'm looking at you, Bosk. I have always had such excitement for new Star Wars content because it meant getting to see new and familiar aliens creatures. I have also always enjoyed how Dave Filoni and the creative team behind Clone Wars and Rebels put familiar species into new jobs roles we wouldn't necessarily think of them doing. So with that said, I have a fun hypothetical scenario that I think can be fun for all fans. You're eating your 7-Eleven breakfast sandwich when suddenly you get a phone call from Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni. They tell you that there is an upcoming episode in The Mandalorian where Mando has to recruit a bounty hunter for a job, and you, yes, you, get to pick any species, race from Star Wars canon or Legends to be this particular bounty hunter. What species would you want to see in a bounty hunter role? Andrew provides his answer as well. He says, my number one answer, and this is not a joke, is a Gungan bounty hunter. Do not generalize Jar Jar's goofy but lovable personality as the personality of all Gungans, for they are fierce warriors. In all seriousness, I do wish we could have gotten more Gungan exposure since the prequels, and I can think of no better way than to change the narrative on Gungans than by introducing a cool and badass Gungan bounty hunter. I think the story potential of the galaxy treating Gungans is lesser than since episode 3 because Jar Jar, a Gungan, unknowingly helped give power to the Empire, could make for an interesting Gungan character. I would love a deep dive into another Gungan and their thoughts on other Gungans, Naboo, the state of the galaxy, and Jar Jar. Thank you for taking my question. And lastly, Misa coming for that bounty. Great question and great answer. Ken, first I just want to ask you about Andrew's answer. Would you be excited for a Gungan bounty hunter, a different Gungan perspective?
I absolutely would. Here's why. Exactly what Andrew's talking about. Of just like, let's put the Gungans back into Star Wars front and center in a different way and make you change your mind about them. Daniel Jose Older did that a little bit. He also did it with Peekba, the Ewok in the last shot. So building that kind of concept, like, right, Joseph, it could really work. Like, oh, you think Gungans are to be, you know, you even got, you know, you're making fun of them there, Bill Burr in episode 6 there. You're like, come on, here's what you got. Here's something different. And this Gungan is pissed off by the plates in the galaxy. And they are great warriors and they're fierce warriors and they're loyal warriors and brave warriors. But now they're coming for you. That could really immediately just turn the tails on what people in general think about Gungans or Jar Jar. You know, people still struggle with it. I understand why. We kind of got to a spot where we just absolutely love Jar Jar Binks, Ahmed Best, and what the Gungans can represent. So this is interesting. I would really be behind this, almost to the point of give it to me.
Yeah, no, I would love it. I would love if it was a Gungan who had no connection to the past. I think great that you brought up last shot. I believe that Gungan says, you know, we don't all talk like that. Kind of a meta joke about Jar Jar. But it'd be great to just have a brand new Gungan grizzled bounty hunter. But I'd also love it if it was like Kid Nass, Boss Nass's child who went dark, went the wrong way, took the wrong path.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's that's really great. Yeah, no, that it could really work. Yeah, it could really work. There could be a lot. And think of the catchphrases, like, you know, there's always a bigger fish, and just like it walks right into the scene and gets you. You got away from like another bounty hunter. Yeah.
Yeah. Misa like this. Bang, bang, bang. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And as far as like any, like, and a specific character, I do like Black Krasantan, the Wookiee bounty hunter that's first introduced in the comics. We hear him roaring all through the Dr. Aphra audio book or audio presentation. Seeing Black Krasantan in live action is something that I would love, or another kind of Wookiee in a, you know, not quite a Chewbacca, good, loyal, best friend role, but something different. You know, we got Tarful and all that kind of stuff, but just that could work for me too. An Ewok one would border, an Ewok bounty hunter would border on, not silly, but just like maybe a tougher leap for a lot of folks. But, you know, Peekwa set the tone of just post the fall of the Empire and the Ewoks getting more, you know, involved in the galaxy. What's to say one doesn't kind of get sick of walking around the forest and want to go chase some fortune. But to me, this, and I love Ewoks, it would be a larger leap to make than the Gungans.
Yeah, I think there's something about the spirit of the Ewoks, and that's the whole thing, is like, obviously any group of characters in Star Wars can contain multitudes. So there could be an Ewok bounty hunter, but I liked it so far. They're like, we're computer hackers and therapy Ewoks so far.
Yeah, yeah.
So things got to go rough to get an Ewok bounty hunter. I think for me, for other species, I love Chadrafan characters, and there have been a lot of them in the books. So I think I'm not alone in that, but that would be fun to see, you know, this shorter, you know, more diminutive species kicking butt would be great. In terms of casting a species in just an incredibly different light by having them be bounty hunters, the other two that jumped out at me is a Kaminoan or Kaminoan, depending on your preference of pronouncing it. I suddenly pictured, like, you know, a Kamino resident just loaded down with weapons, maybe an eye patch, and just headbutting people with that long neck. Smack. And the other one is a Toydarian, because I think a Toydarian could actually be terrifying, you know, swooping in from, you know, surprise angles with a blaster.
Well, yeah, especially after seeing, you know, the Clone Wars stuff and the actual society and how it functions a little bit. Yeah. That would be good.
Yeah. King Katunko there with he's got the sword, right? Yeah. And Toydarian, who's like, yeah, I don't hold with my people and all this honor BS. Let's go. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. So many great options. And I think that's what's great about all the content that's coming with Disney Plus and with the people who have grown up with Star Wars at this point, you know, grown up with the prequels, that there's a lot of people, I think, very much like Andrew, who asked this great question, who are hungry to see things from their childhood in a new and different light. And I think we're going to start seeing that in all these Disney Plus shows.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential for that. That Gungan one really works for me.
Yeah, yeah, I think I'm going to agree with Andrew's answer to his own question. So well asked, well answered, Andrew. Thanks to this Andrew, the other Andrew, Sith Fisto, and Vanessa Fontaine for all those great questions. That's it for our questions, Ken.
That's it for those questions. And this episode, big look at the news, Mandalorian. I'm sure more will be on the way. If you want to follow us or join the conversation, you can do so by going to Twitter and Force Center Pod. Use the hashtag Force Center. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram and YouTube. Podcasts available in a lot of different spots, including Anchor, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. You can get some merch, tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. Go to patreon.com/ForceCenter if you want to support. And we'll talk about maybe getting that Spotify playlist up there. What do you want to take the galaxy down with music-wise? We'll get that up there. We got our own stuff as well. Again, thanks to everyone who supported the Riley's Cantina Live. You can go to kennapsack.com for information on all the things I do, or follow me at Ken Knapsack at my podcast, The Knapsack Files, and my show we do on Saturday nights called Saturday Night Knapsack, different kind of show, been having a lot of fun doing, so check it out. We also are highlighting charities and things that mean something to us that are outside the realm of Star Wars. I am a bone marrow donor for Be the Match, and I always want to highlight that. It's very important, so go to bethematch.org and sign up. It's real easy get tested, get your swab up, and you know, all the kind of thing, and then you're in a database, and someone might need your bone marrow, and it is a life-saving decision that you can make by becoming a bone marrow donor. Go to bethematch.org or go to kennapsack.com to the charity spotlight tab, where you can find out more. Joseph,
Yeah, you can find me Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can go to my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all of my other comedy adventures of all kinds. And for the thing that I want to highlight, this is the last time I'll be highlighting this, but there's an organization called Vote Forward. You print out letters, and then you write a personal message about why you vote to help encourage your fellow citizens to use their power however they choose fit to be a part of making decisions about the future and voting. I've been writing a lot of those letters, and it has been really great fun, actually. It's felt really great. Those letters are all being sent this coming Saturday, October 17th. So as this is broadcast, this is your last opportunity to sign up to write a few letters. And if you are interested in checking that out, you can go to their website. It is votefwd.org.
Do that. I got my ballot here today. Arrived at the house actually over the weekend. So going to be doing that and voting. Vote, everybody. Get involved. Thank you, Joseph, for that. And thank you to all of you for listening to our look at the Star Wars news. So for Baby Yoda looking up at the camera like a French royalty, like a member of the French royalty, we'll see you next time here on Force Center.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.